Welcome to the deep dive. You know, if you're staring at your screen, maybe feeling a bit paralyzed by all the investment choices out there, stocks, bonds, real estate funds, even things like asset-backed investments. And you feel caught, right? Between making a quick decision under pressure or maybe just putting it off entirely, well, you're definitely not alone. That feeling is pretty universal. So today, we're not picking specific assets, no hot tips here. Instead, we're taking your source material, the research, the guides, the core principles, and we're going to pull out a really structured step-by-step framework. Our mission really is to help you turn that investment guesswork into a process, something logical, repeatable. To give you that objective clarity, you need to, well, move past just going with your gut.
Exactly. And what's really powerful about the material we're looking at is where it tells you to start, you know, effective investing. It doesn't actually begin with chasing the next big thing. It really starts with building a solid foundational mindset first. Get that structure in place, and then you have the confidence to make decisions that actually line up with your long-term goals. It helps you avoid that pressure cooker feeling that leads to, you know, making mistakes from rushing or from just delaying things forever. We're basically handing you the map.
Okay, I like that, a map. Yeah. So unpack that map then. So before we even glance at a company's balance sheet or, I don't know, a property listing, the source material points to three essential pillars. And these aren't just vague ideas, right? They're described as the sort of intellectual architecture for successful investors.
Oh, absolutely critical, because they fundamentally define how you interact with risk. These pillars, they're what separate investors who stick to their guns during a downturn from those who panic and sell. They provide the necessary system. So the first pillar is knowledge. And this isn't just knowing what a stock is, it's deeper. It means really understanding the different personalities of asset types, like knowing that a government bond usually offers stability, maybe lower returns, while, say, an emerging market stock has huge growth potential, but, you know, way more volatility. That kind of comparative understanding, it lets you properly weigh the real risk-reward trade-offs before you commit any capital.
Okay, that makes total sense. Knowledge first, but then comes what feels like the really tricky part, actually doing it. Discipline. Everyone says be consistent, but when the market's going crazy, what does discipline look like day to day?
Well, discipline is all about following your preset process, no matter what the headlines are shouting. It's that commitment to, say, reviewing your portfolio quarterly, not obsessively checking it daily. And it's definitely about ignoring that that hot tip your friend just has to share. The material is really clear on this. Emotional investing reacts. Discipline investing is proactive. Sticking to your research-based plan, that's your shield against market noise.
Right, the shield. And speaking of sticking to the plan, that brings us to what might be the hardest pillar for many people today, patience, especially now with everything feeling so instant.
Ah, patience, yes. It's basically accepting that real wealth building takes time. It's not a sprint. Mm-hmm. This pillar is what keeps your eyes on the long-term prize. So, for instance, if the market drops 10%, patience is what stops you from locking in that loss by selling in fear. You hold on because your original plan was maybe for 5 or 10 years, not just this month's swing. It keeps your finger off the panic button.
Okay, so we've nailed down the mindset. Knowledge, discipline, patience. Got it. But then there's the next challenge. Analysis paralysis. So many options. How do we actually sift through potential investments without just drowning in information? The research lays out 5 clear steps, doesn't it? To turn that feeling of being overwhelmed into actual clarity.
Yes, this structured research bit is really the engine room. It kicks off with the first 2 steps. Step 1. Identify potential investments. And the key word here is potential. It means being strict about filtering your options right from the start. Only list things, stocks, real estate deals, funds, whatever, that genuinely align with your goals and, crucially, your risk tolerance that you've already defined. Don't even waste time researching stuff you know is going to give you sleepless nights.
Good point. Filter first.
Then, step 2, gather reliable information. Honestly, in today's world with social media and hype everywhere, this means being really strict about your sources. You've got to look past the buzzwords and focus on credible stuff. Audited financial statements, official company filings, reports from reputable market analysts, verified data, not just someone's opinion online.
Okay, and step 3 is where the real number crunching happens, right? Analyze key metrics. And this is where that knowledge pillar pays off, because the metrics are totally different depending on what you're looking at. Like for stocks, you're digging into things like earnings growth, maybe dividend yields, the cash they pay out versus the price and broader market trends. But if you switch to looking at real estate...
Exactly. Those stock metrics become pretty irrelevant. For property, you're zeroing in on really local factors. quality of the location, signs of demand, and super important things like rental yield, which is basically just the income you expect versus the property's cost. Tells you if it pays for itself. And then for things like funds, ETFs, mutual funds, you're looking at their track record, the fees they charge, and what the managers are actually doing. Got to compare like with like.
Right, apples to apples. So this analysis gives us data points, scores maybe, but how do you actually choose between, say, five different opportunities where one looks great on growth but is risky, and another is super stable but has low yield? How do you synthesize that?
That brings us neatly to step four. Compare risks and returns, but do it comprehensively. This means looking at the potential upside against the potential downside. This is where you really need to think about worst-case scenarios. And remember, risk isn't just about losing money. It's also about your emotional comfort level with that potential loss. I mean, if a possible 10% dip is going to make you panic sell, then maybe the risk profile is just too high for you, no matter how good the potential returns look on paper.
That's a really important nuance. The emotional side of risk.
Absolutely. And this connects directly to the final and maybe most structured part. Step five, use decision-making frameworks. This is the secret sauce that makes the whole process repeatable and objective. The material suggests getting past just gut feeling by actually creating a scoring model, maybe even a weighted one.
A weighted scoring model. Okay, that sounds a bit technical, but I guess the point is to force discipline over emotion.
Mm.
How do the sources say we should, you know, build that?
Yeah, it's less complicated than it sounds. Instead of just ranking everything 1 to 5 equally, you assign weights based on what matters most to you. So let's say you're investing for retirement, still decades away. You might weigh fit with long-term growth goals super high, maybe 40%, risk tolerance match at 30%, and expected short-term return, maybe only 10%.
Ah, okay. So you prioritize based on your own situation.
Precisely. You take the data you gathered back in step three for each option, score it against your weighted criteria, and boom, the one with the highest score. That's the most logical choice for your portfolio right now. It enforces step four by making sure the options that really fit your long-term needs score better than something that's just, you know, flashy in the short term. It turns the decision from a guess into almost an equation.
That's a big mental shift, isn't it? Moving from just picking something to objectively evaluating it. Okay, but even with a solid framework like this, people still mess up. We all fall into traps. Recognizing those mistakes has got to be just as important as finding good opportunities. What are the big pitfalls we need to actively watch out for?
Yeah, the material flags, five really common psychological and behavioral traps. First one, probably the most common. Chasing trends or hot tips, we see it all the time. Following the hype, whether it's a meme stock or some sector everyone's suddenly raving about.
Yeah.
Without doing your own homework, it almost always ends up with buying high and eventually selling low.
Okay, easy to say don't chase, but resisting that FOMO, that fear of missing out when everyone seems to be making money, that's tough.
Oh, it's a huge psychological hurdle, no doubt. But that framework we just talked about, that's your defense. The answer is always circle back. Does this fit my plan? Does it score well on my criteria? Not just, is everyone else doing it?
Mm.
The second trap is kind of related, ignoring risk management. Sounds basic, I know, but it gets forgotten when excitement kicks in. The rule is simple. Never invest money you genuinely can't afford to lose. Always think about the downside. It protects your capital, sure, but maybe more importantly, it protects your peace of mind. You want investments that let you sleep at night.
Which then helps you avoid trap number three, right?
Yeah.
Because you're less likely to freak out.
Exactly. Track three, overreacting to market fluctuations. Short-term swings, even sharp ones, they happen. They're normal. But they can trigger really emotional, often panicked decisions. If you've done your homework, steps 1 to 5, and you're focused on your long-term goal, that 5 or 10 year horizon, then a 15% dip this quarter, it's just noise. It's not usually a signal to abandon a solid, well-researched position. Sticking to your timeline, that patience pillar is key here.
Makes sense. Keep your eyes on the horizon. What's number four?
Number four is a structural mistake, lack of diversification. Putting all your eggs in one basket, one stock, one industry, even one country, it massively increases the risk of a major blow-up. Spreading your investments across different types of assets, different sectors, it's just fundamental protection. It helps balance things out if one area takes an unexpected nosedive.
Diversification. Got it. And the last one.
The last one, trap five, kind of undermines everything else if you ignore it. Neglecting continuous learning. Markets change. Technology changes. Regulations change. What worked brilliantly 5 years ago might not work at all today. So you need to regularly revisit not just your investments, but your whole decision-making process. Keep learning, keep adapting.
Okay, so we've got the mindset pillars, the research steps, and the traps to dodge. What about tools? How can we actually execute this plan efficiently without getting totally swamped trying to gather all this data manually? The sources mentioned using digital platforms.
Right. Digital platforms can be really helpful support systems here. They mainly help with those first couple of research steps, finding options and gathering data. They usually help in three main ways. First, they often provide access to vetted or verified opportunities. This can save a ton of time and reduce the risk of looking at something, well, dodgy.
Okay, saves research time.
Second, they offer data-driven insights. Things like performance history, risk scores, fee breakdowns, often all gathered in one place for easier analysis, super useful for steps 3 and 4 of your evaluation. And third, many offer portfolio tracking and management tools, so you can monitor how things are doing against your goals in real time without needing complex spreadsheets.
But, and this feels like a crucial, but the sources stress that these platforms, like the example mentioned, Gamma Assets for asset-backed things, they support your process, they don't replace it, right?
Absolute. Critical distinction. They complement your knowledge and your framework. They are not a substitute for your own thinking. You still have to do the hard work of steps 3, 4, and 5, the analysis, the risk comparison, the final decision based on your framework. It's your personal due diligence combined with the data they provide. That combination is what leads to truly informed decisions.
Got it. Tools are helpers, not decision makers.
So if we kind of wrap this whole journey up, learning to make solid investment decisions. It's a whole process. It starts with that foundational mindset, discipline, patience. Then it moves through that structured research phase using those weighted metrics and objective frameworks. And all along, you have to be actively, consciously avoiding those emotional traps like chasing trends. That framework, it's your North Star through it all.
So boiling it down for you, the listener, the right investment for your portfolio. It's almost never the one making the most noise in the news this week. It's the one that consistently scores highest when you measure it against your specific goals, your actual comfort with risk, and your investment timeline. That structured, objective approach, that's a real game changer.
Exactly. And maybe on that note of objectivity and the need for continuous learning, we can leave you with a final thought to chew on. Given that the research really hammers home that markets evolve and strategies need to adapt, how might the arrival of completely new asset classes in the next few years, maybe things driven by blockchain or AI, stuff we haven't even properly categorized yet, how might that fundamentally change the specific metrics like earnings growth or rental yields that we currently rely on in our decision-making frameworks? That challenge, the need to potentially rebuild the framework itself, that's probably the defining task for a successful long-term investor going forward.